This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now. Brian Rotell is going to be with us in a little while. Good friend of the show, chief legal strategist. He's going to give us insurance and the business perspective. You know, are the tariffs hurting or not? What about commercial real estate? It's evidently playing a major role in our school funding. Why? Because more and more businesses are not buying or leasing the buildings. Therefore, they don't get the tax dollars. Where's the tax dollars in the cities go? To the schools. Guess who's buried in deficit? Most of these cities. Chicago, the worst part of it is their fiscal management. And then we have Lawrence Jones here in studio, and there's a lot of moving parts today. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
All of this is a total abuse of power. It's a manufactured emergency.
What's happening here in Washington, D.C. is just a stunt. He just decided to create a new news cycle.
Plain and simple. Donald Trump wants to distract.
Distract from what? From Russia? I don't know. Distract from what? The trade deals? Distract from what? The D.C. standoff. More National Guardsmen flood the nation's capital. Now it's time to crack down on the teen thugs and scoop up illegals as Dem try to figure out if they're pro-crime or just anti-Trump.
Number two.
We need to disabuse ourselves of the way things have been done. It's not good enough to just hold hands, have a candlelight vigil, and talk about the way the world should be. And we have got to meet fire with fire.
So Governor Gavin Newsom's got something to do because he can't govern the state. Gerrymandering standoff has the Dems coming back to town in Texas while California's trying to squeeze out more seats. And all this has brought Obama back, a man, let's say, not on a winning streak.
Number one.
Today is the big meeting. This really eclipses anything that happened on Friday. To have world leaders from Europe on a couple of days' notice descend on Washington really underscores how important this meeting is today. This has amazing impact on the international world order that's been in place since World War II and the Cold War.
Yep, that is Democratic Congressman Bill Keating weighing in on the European leaders. Seven Strong plus Zelensky are in town right now to dig in on what really came out of the Alaska summit and where we go from here, because a trilateral summit could happen as far as Friday. But then we hear one of the members of the Russian delegation said a trilateral was not brought up. But that could be typical Russian speak. Lawrence Jones, it's going to be 12 o'clock, a one-on-one, a 1 o'clock, a one-on-seven. You know, we don't know how it's going to be. And then there's going to be a press conference today. Can you imagine these world leaders all taking all these questions Trump style?
I think I like it. I like the transparency. What I've learned, I guess, when you encompass Trump term one, is to take a beat. A part of the reason why there's so much criticism right now in talking is because we don't know what happened in the meeting. And so a lot of people are speculating right now. One thing I know for sure is that the president wants peace. The question is at what cost? Does Putin really mean what he says he means when he says there are going to be security guarantees? Let's see what happens, Brian.
Yeah, I will say that Europeans going to come in. They want to know the details, but they could be doing more. And Senator Lindsey Graham brought that up yesterday. Cut 12.
To Europe, why don't you put tariffs on India for buying Russian oil? To Europe, why don't you threaten China with tariffs for being the largest purchaser of Russian oil? To Europe, you can do more. If Europe and the United States banded together and we told Russia that if this war does not come to an end, we're going to destroy your fossil fuel economy, this war would come to an end.
So, yeah, I never thought about that. Why is Europe not putting tariffs on?
You know, and to that point, Brian, we had Dan Hoffman on earlier in the program, and I sent him a message. He said I could communicate this message. And I asked him, I said, what are we missing when it comes to this negotiation? He said this. He goes, we didn't get quite to it, but one thing I would expect being in the pasture at the CIA is that the president would ask the director of the CIA, Ratcliffe, to brief him on Putin's plans and intentions and pain points. The question is how can we bring Putin to where we want him to be and what we need to do? Intelligence can help inform that, but ultimately it has to be a policy decision from the president.
Right. Ratcliffe was there, so I'm sure he was able to point out some inconsistencies. When it comes down to the actual swapping of land, what do we know? We know what Russia concedes, Kharkiv and Sumy perhaps. What Russia gets, Donetsk and Luhansk. They freeze the lines and maybe deal with Kherson and Zaporizhia. Zaporizhia is key for the Ukrainians because they want their nuclear power plant back, which, by the way, all of this stuff is frozen. They steal the land, but right now the best we could do is try to swap to get some of it back. But they actually want the no-go zone for me is what they've done and what they're requesting with the Fortress Belt. The Fortress Belt is made up of four large cities, several towns and settlements. They run north to south. They had a pre-war population of 380,000. The belt is about 50 kilometers long, 31 miles, about the distance between Washington and Baltimore. And it contains coal. It contains iron. It contains a ton of rare earth. It's a lot of money, natural gas. It's a lot of money. But more importantly, it's a block of Kharkiv and Kyiv. If you give up that area, it's one highway through farmland right to the capital.
The question is, when it comes to Donbass, Brian, do you think it is okay, and this is Ukraine, we can all speculate, do you think it's fair to say, if we give them the security guarantees, we give them Article 5 without giving them admittance into NATO, that's fair to give that away? Because what the Ukrainians would say is, it's not just the land, this is just a strategic posture for our military. Right. But if we're giving them air support and boots on the ground, is that okay?
Well, as Dan Hoffman brought up, keep in mind it's expensive.
Right.
And then do you want international troops on your land when you're just trying to grow your town, your city? Well, the answer would be, yeah, if it provides security, because we know that in a few years they're going to make up some story about Russian-speaking people who want their freedom and are oppressed by the democracy that's burgeoning underneath them, which is folly and even their statements. I just hope the Russians understand that nobody buys their ridiculous take on history. It's also brought up to me, too, is that, yeah, we were on the same side as the Soviets in World War II that Vladimir Putin keeps bringing up. But you know the only reason we're on the same side is because Hitler double-crossed them. But he was in; they were in bed with Hitler.
Right.
So this is the same attitude. I'm not saying I'm always hoping the next person coming in is Gorbachev or a drunk Yeltsin. But this guy has... Clinton tried to work with him, thought he could. Bush tried to work with him, was sure he could. Obama says, I'm going to reset. Sorry about those other guys. And then Biden, ridiculous, one meeting and one terrible. And then back to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump says, yeah, I could deal with this guy. We're going to find out. Because my hope is that Trump listens to a lot of what the Europeans saying, and that is, yeah, we know you're not going to get the 18% back that you lost in the war. But swapping land that they can't capture, I think, is a no-go zone.
I just think, Brian, if we don't deal with this problem now, okay, we set it back for a year. Yeah, more people die. The second thing is, the president is actually one of the few that I trust with dealing with this conflict. Because to your point, Brian, what's going to happen if they don't reach some type of agreement or they don't get the security guarantees? This time around, when another president is in, this is the apple of Putin's eye. This is ideology. It's almost equivalent to the radical Islamists, right? You sign a treaty with them saying they won't attack, they won't build nuclear weapons, and they just wait it out because this is their heart. This is what they want.
Yeah, I want you to hear. Here's Senator Chris Murphy. These are the people that always have something negative to say. Cut 19.
That meeting was a disaster. It was an embarrassment for the United States. It was a failure. Putin got everything he wanted. I mean, first of all, he wanted that photo op, right? He wanted to be absolved of his war crimes in front of the world. He was invited to the United States. War criminals are not normally invited to the United States of America. He is intentionally murdering civilians. He's kidnapping children. And now he got to stand next to the president of the United States, legitimized in the view of the world. Trump said, if I don't get a ceasefire, Putin's going to pay a price. And then he walked out of that meeting saying, I didn't get a ceasefire, I didn't get a peace deal, and I'm not even considering sanctions. Putin walks away with his photo op with zero commitments made and zero consequences. What a great day for Russia.
That's not true. First of all, you don't know what happened in the meeting because you weren't present. And the leaks of the from the administration on what took place in the meeting has been very few. Number two, the president didn't say that he wouldn't put sanctions on Putin. He's trying to get peace a go. And if it doesn't work out in the next week or so, you can very well see maximum pressure against Russia. So the idea, you know, Marco Rubio made this point on the Sunday shows, and I think it was in a very astute point. People keep saying that the president is legitimizing Putin. It's a world superpower. It's the world's second largest nuclear power. So it's like, You guys are making a point that he took a meeting with the guy when he's been talking with him by phone for months now. Yeah. It's asinine to the debate.
Here's what General Jack Keane said, cut 20.
People walk away and say, well, there's nothing there. Nothing happened but a red carpet and a flyover. Well, that's nonsense. A lot of things have happened here. And the reality is there's a potential trilateral meeting, including President Zelensky. I think the president's going to assess that. Based on what is happening here in Washington, D.C. And this includes the Secretary General, all the top leaders of the European countries are here. And obviously, President Zelensky is here with his team. And what are they all working on? They're all working on peace with President Trump. That in itself is a huge step forward.
So we'll see what happens when we get more details. We'll see what happens because I think it's better. I mean, Zelensky just can't. I know the president would want Zelensky just to sign off on all that. Number one, I don't believe that anything the Russians do, unless it's you have to be able to verify it and in real time, and there's got to be a block against them changing their mind. But let's say the Russians say, here's your rule five. Here, I'm going to exchange some territory. I want the rest of the Donbass region. I don't think that Zelensky signs off on it, but he should have a counterproposal. Don't just say no. Just have a counterproposal on what's possible. And you have to know, too, that he does not speak as a king. He speaks as somebody elected with a parliament.
Right.
And that parliament's got to approve it. So Zelensky could go recommend it. But he's got, you know, he's got 56% approval rating. That's hardly something that's going to, intimidate the parliament to vote with him.
Right. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen when it comes to the approval of this process. The last thing I would say is this. The Democrats... You don't help the process when you try the same thing you did back in 2016, saying that the president is friends with Putin. Okay, you guys did that, and now we're finding revelations of how you planted all of this, and it wasn't real. It wasn't real. And it derailed his old administration the first term. Mm-hmm. So don't start this stuff back forth that he's working with Putin and they're buddies and he likes the dictator because he wants to be a dictator. It's not helpful to the process.
I hear you. Back in a moment, we come back to gerrymandering. Just got amped up as Texas and California go at it. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What's really striking here is how badly played this is for the Democrats. Of all of the places for these fugitive legislators to go, Illinois should have been the last on the list. It is the most gerrymandered state in the union. And most of us were just dumbfounded that they would go to Illinois, which is my home state. And Illinois, New York, California, those are all heavily gerrymandered.
So Jonathan Turley weighing in with Mark Levin last night, and what he's doing is saying that for these Texas lawmakers to leave Texas and hide out in Illinois was dumb because it highlights how bad this has been gerrymandered, and Texas is totally constitutionally allowed to do what they're doing. Lawrence Jones still with me. Lawrence, you want to weigh in?
Well, they better be careful because there's a bill already on the floor. There were two maps, essentially, in Texas. And they could have got the 4-5. Jeff Leach, who is one of the chairmen of the Criminal Justice Committee, is saying, you know what? Why don't we do the 9-10 map then? If they want to play this game,
9-10 districts would flip.
100%. That could flip. So you guys better be careful on how you play this game because it's not going to – the population of Texas is growing. Not the same for California. Not the same for New York. So – and by the way – Brian, I made this point on our show this morning. The Latino vote was trending right. So this is going to give the Latino community more seats, which is based on the last election.
Right. So the four of the five districts that are now on the table to be redistricted when the Democrats come back in and allow this thing to have a quorum are Hispanic, majority Hispanic seats. So Kevin Kiley's in California. He's one of the few Republican lawmakers there, and this could affect him directly. Here's cut 25.
The good news is a poll just a couple days ago came out showing that voters are standing by their decision. They're saying, thanks for asking. We want to keep the independent commission. We don't want to give this power back to politicians. The bad news is that Newsom has already come up with a plan to defraud the people of California by making the yes option on the ballot look like no, and by making no, you'll look like yes. And they're going to spend over $100 million to perpetrate that fraud on our electorate. So we are going to need to fight against this in every way that we can.
And Schwarzenegger coming out is really interesting because he's got power in the city, in the state. I know he left with about 43% approval rating, but his popularity has since gone up. People look at his gubernatorial years as much better than Newsom's. And he came out and said, I'm against gerrymandering.
Yeah. All I would say to the people of California, remember how your leaders handled the prop system. You remember the last prop that they put on the ballot to make it where if people stole less than $1,000 that the cops weren't going to show up? How did that do for your state? Many businesses left. Crime went up. So don't try to cheat the system. Do it the right way. Have the debate there and just take the win. You guys gerrymandered. The other side did it as well. Let bygones be bygones.
So we'll see what happens because we know it's going to be four or five seats will decide the power in the administration. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that Newsom is using this just to launch his presidential campaign. It's a risk in this. If the referendum doesn't pass, he loses.
Yes, so he loses. And he also has to take in consideration his popularity, as well as the Democratic Party popularity, is not so good right
now. He's got 38% approval rating.
So, I mean, you want to go with it?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Here's more from Kevin Kiley. Cut 26.
What's happening in California is a lot different because voters have already established an independent citizens commission. And they've said politicians are not allowed to draw their own district lines. That is an inherent conflict of interest. And so Gavin Newsom is seeking to upend the Constitution and to override the will of voters. And by the way, if he does this, California, the goal is to reduce California's congressional delegation from 9 out of 52 Republicans to 4 out of 52 Republicans. So we would be in worse position. We're in worse position now than even the Democrats would be in Texas if that plan goes through.
So you do that and then Texas redraws the line from 9 to 10 and you still lose. Meanwhile, you're already have lost two congressional seats in California. So,
yeah, I think Indiana's making moves now, and I think Florida will be next. Brian Rotella is next. We'll talk a little about the economy, the real economy, and so much more. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. Special thanks to Lawrence Jones for coming in. Keep in mind, we are monitoring the events over at the White House, as we expect seven world leaders, including President Zelensky, to be coming to the White House today at 12 o'clock. It's supposed to be the one-on-one with the president, probably J.D. Vance, and Zelensky's team. They're not going to put cameras in. They're going to let them talk with each other, lay the groundwork. Then in come the European leaders. I know Finland, Italy, France, U.K. are all here. Seven strong. So it's going to be interesting. We'll monitor that. Meanwhile, back to action here, the number one industry. And you could say the reason why the stock market's growing these days at the way it is because of AI. People building out their infrastructure, convinced it's going to be the wave of the future. 55% of Americans are already using AI in some way, shape, or form, which, considering how slow the internet caught on, pretty amazing. Brian Rotella joins us now, managing partner and chief legal strategist for Genco Legal. Also wrote a column about AI and some of the worries that people should have. Brian, talk about privacy and what AI is doing now. What should people be aware of? All right. He is not holding out on you. We just lost his feed. So what he's talking about with AI, for example, if you go out and you start putting personal things into the computer, let's say you have some health issues, let's say you got some personal issues, how to handle a troubled child, what are some of the common ways to do it? Hey, I got this cancer diagnosis today. What are some of the things I could be doing? Are you worried about? Do you want that to be public with your name? And right now, there's not guardrails out there to make sure that your request, your Google, for example, your Google searches, not public, but AI, that'll be public. So we'll talk about that too. And people may be overemphasizing what AI can do, and it's going to get better over time. But right now, it often is giving people incorrect information. And there's no age requirement on a lot of these requests. So do you want 12-year-olds asking the same thing as 22-year-olds, 52-year-olds? Don't think so. Meanwhile, we're looking at one major problem, and that is energy. The Chinese got plenty of energy. The one thing that we got, we have a lot of intelligence. We have a lot of advancement, but we don't have a lot of power in our grid. It is unbelievably weak. That's why we got to quickly build up, and that's what the president's hoping to get when he gets all his companies together. All right, so here's Brian Rotella. Brian, what should we know about AI?
Hey, Brian. So a lot of people are worried right now that AI is the Terminator. I'm so less worried about that. I'm much more worried that AI is a privacy crisis that's going to make healthcare before HIPAA, the privacy law for healthcare records, look like child's play. And it's because a lot of people think that when they use ChatGPT or these other AI tools, that they're search engines still. It's like a super Google. Reality, Brian, most people are using AI, those tools, for a conversation, and they're using it like a conversation you would use with your doctor, with your priest or pastor, things that you would not say to maybe your spouse, things like, what do I say if I want to divorce my spouse, and how do I talk to my kids? What do I have if I've got a mole down in a private area? What's that mean?
This is what's going into AI right now, and Sam Altman, like me, are really concerned. There is no privacy protection for that. It's all up in the cloud, and there's a real potential it will get discovered. It's not secure. It's not private.
So not hacked, but discovered. But why, unless you're searching for it, why would I get your searches? I don't get your Google searches. Why would I get your AI searches?
That's a great question. So there's a case that just came out, OpenAI, which is what Sam Altman's company with ChatGPT, they got sued by the New York Times. Long story short, New York Times thought that AI was basically copywriting its material. District court judge said, okay, we're going to require OpenAI to keep all of the sessions, the prompt sessions, Brian, not just for what was relevant to the New York Times, to all users, not just the sessions that are active, but those are that those are ultimately were deleted. So you've got a court, a district court case saying that this stuff has to be preserved. And when I look at it from my legal liability perspective, it makes sense because think about it if it's being used, and it is right now, in a medical office to be a what we call AI scribe. Well, if that ultimately is relevant in a malpractice case or some type of government case, you can't destroy that evidence. So the way that this stuff is going to ultimately get discovered is through two things. One, the courts with litigators. Second, ransomware. People in Russia, these ransomware service groups and outside in different countries are going to want to get this personal private information. And imagine how embarrassing that would be to these large AI companies if they got leveraged and extorted that they're going to disclose all of these extremely personal conversations.
So what are the guardrails now? I mean, they're coming up with it soon. I know they did it with crypto. How close are the guardrails for with AI? You got David Sachs in there as the AI czar for a reason.
Yeah, there are any. So I give President Trump a ton of credit for what he's come out with his AI legislation or proposed executive rule last month. It's to deregulate. It's for energy because you're going to need energy. It's like splitting the atom with AI. But right now, no one is looking at this from a perspective of privacy. No one is looking at this from we need an AI HIPAA. That's the article I wrote for The Washington Examiner. We need something that protects these conversations so that they're protected, like when you talk to your doctor, anyone in your audience, you know, when you go to your doctor, you have to sign the form. They can't share your information unless ultimately you consent. Right now, that doesn't exist. So Altman and people like me are saying this should be the number one priority of our government, is that we make sure people feel that their conversations in AI are private. Otherwise, they aren't going to use it, Brian. They're not going to upskill. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we're going to get behind China.
What are people – you say there's time for a competency on AI, and not just say telling people to look it up is going to work.
As far as looking up things on AI?
Yeah, like what AI can do and can't do. The American people need a primer.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know how much you use AI, but I use it like 6-7 hours a day. You can give AI a role. You can ask it, hey, I want you to be my best marketing professional in the world. And what it's doing, it's scanning zillions and zillions of stuff. And ultimately, if you give it that role and you go through all these things, have it interview you one question at a time, this thing will print out stuff, Brian, give you stuff that's better than most marketing professionals. It's happening in my profession right now. We're integrating it into our legal workflows. So is medical. And there aren't any guardrails by the government. And I'll tell you one other thing. Where there are guardrails, and this was the myth in the Big Beautiful Bill Act, they tried. Trump tried. They didn't get a moratorium on state laws. So now you've got a Rubik's Cube happening of each state. California, right, has come out with the legislation that anything that sounds like a doctor, where an AI is acting like a doctor, that's going to be outlawed. Brian, how the heck are these companies going to be able to – you shouldn't have to hire people like me to figure out how you're going to have to scale over 50 states with all these regulations. And I always go back to, is China going to have to worry about that?
No. Absolutely not. That's so true. Brian, what do you think the best sites are, best AI sites?
As far as the AI apps, I have no endorsement here, but I can tell you, I use ChatGPT Enterprise. I use the business platform. I also use personal legal ones. But for your audience, to me, stay with the safe ones. Stay with ChatGPT, at least the paid version. Anyone using your free versions out there, assume your information is being used so these things can learn on your information. Making sure you look at the fine print. Is it learning on my information? Because that's going to tell you that it's very much your stuff is not going to be private. Anthropic, which is Claude, is another good one. Again, if you use the paid one. And candidly, Elon Musk's Grok. All three of them are good. But be smart. Get the paid version of it. And treat it like you're writing an email to your boss. You're writing an email to your employer. Don't put stuff in there you wouldn't want people to know that could be discovered, because right now it's not private. And don't just listen to me. Sam Altman's talking about this all over the place.
Understood. Brian Rotella, thanks so much. Great advice.
My pleasure, Brian.
All right. And when it comes to AI, I think so much of it's new. So many people, I hope they're teaching it in schools. But I think with everyone with a phone, I mean, before you had the phones, before the Blackberries, if you had a computer, well, I'm going to go work on my computer. I'm going to leave my computer at home. You have a laptop, you have a desktop. Now it's, you have a computer in your pocket, in your hand. So you could start experimenting immediately. The accessibility, it couldn't be any more convenient. And to think that you got to ask questions as if it's got each question's going to be public, that's certainly new. The one guy who I think should be embarrassed about what's going on right now, remember I told you about the Russia hoax, and a lot of you guys are saying to yourself, when it comes to what's happening with Russia, Brian, that's plowed ground, or there should be an arrest. So a couple of things came out last week I thought were really significant. Number one, this guy Mike Rogers, head of DNI, he was writing to, in 2017, he's writing to James Clapper and John Brennan, saying, guys, you want me to quickly go through all this intelligence and come up with the conclusion you want me to, but I'm not comfortable with this timeline. And they essentially wrote back, yeah, I understand this. This is not typical, but get comfortable. We don't have a lot of time. Now, what was the rush? You had to quickly get an investigation, stand it up before you leave office, because Trump beat Clinton and Hillary and company were trying to make sure, and Obama, that he was not going to be successful. They would never admit that, but now we're seeing the emails. We're seeing the text messages. Now to James Comey. James Comey was found to send a Columbia professor, his friend, intelligence about what was going on with his investigation, give it to that Columbia professor who was giving it to the New York Times, Michael Schmidt. Michael Schmidt won a Pulitzer Prize for his work on the Russia investigation. It was the collusion illusion that never came true. He got him a message. Guess what? James Comey was supplying the intelligence. The guy is insane. Remember 8647, walking on the beach, realizes he sees a rock formation, 8647, but I don't know what that means. 86 could be 86, like kill him in mob world. He says he didn't know that, but he's the FBI director. It gets weirder. Yesterday, he posted something on the internet. It's got about 5 to 10 minutes. He looks like he's in a hostage situation, and he does it a message. And I can't tell you, when I saw the headline, I thought it was a parody. But this is James Comey bringing in Trump and Taylor Swift and his life and family. Cut 39.
Of course we need to stand up to jerks and defend what matters. But I think we have to try to do that without becoming like them, which is what makes me think about Taylor Swift. She's made clear that she sees Donald Trump for what he is. While our elderly makeup-covered president is posting about whether Taylor Swift is still hot and declaring that he can't stand her, what's she doing? Living her best life. She said something about dealing with internet trolls that stuck with me. Think of your energy as if it's expensive, she said, as if it's like a luxury item. Not everyone can afford it. We can't stop people from being jerks. What we can do is stop it from hurting us, from changing us.
Do you believe this is the FBI director looking at a pop singer, no matter how successful, and using her as inspiration? Not Cicero or Socrates or Plato, and going back and you might say, well, this person's trying to tell me how smart they are. Instead, he says he's inspired and mows the lawn to Taylor Swift and thinks we care enough to listen to it for 6-7 minutes. Trump has totally broken this guy. I mean, he was a sanctimonious, pompous ass to begin with, but wasn't exposed. I remember that's what a lot of the Bush people thought when he was there as assistant FBI director. When he became FBI director, I guess President Obama, he kind of looked up to President Obama, even though he said he was a Republican. And he looked to undermine Donald Trump. Now we're getting specifics, and he's clearly gotten into his head. The guy can't sell a book. He can't get a job. He's really got nothing to do. His daughter just got let go from the Southern District of New York. And it's all because of him. And now we find out that this guy is a shell of himself, and he knows the walls are closing in on him. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, we'll open up the phones, getting a few more calls. You don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Late night television, as we have known it since around 1950, is going to disappear. But those voices are not going anywhere. People like Stephen Colbert are too talented and too essential to go away. It's not going to happen. Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
So Conan O'Brien went into the Television Hall of Fame and made a speech, and he just said, you know, his famous line. You know Conan O'Brien's career arc? Writer for The Simpsons, writer for SNL, and tight with Lorne Michaels. Lorne Michaels says, look, I got to replace David Letterman. He went to CBS to compete against The Tonight Show when he didn't get The Tonight Show. So I choose an unknown, a writer named Conan O'Brien. Got off to an awful start. And just before he was canceled, he began to turn things around, found his footing, and started doing exceedingly well, to the point where they started, say, he was starting to get recruited by other networks to be their 11:30 Tonight Show host. So that's when I believe it was Jeff Zucker said to Conan, I will sign you to do the Tonight Show when Jay retires. I think it was 3 or 5 years. So when it got close to retirement, Jay basically said, not ready to retire. So I have an idea. Zucker came up with it. He's not ready to retire. Conan's ready to go to the Tonight Show. So what does he do? They put Jay Leno at 10:30. 10:30. And then they had their local news, and then Conan came on. It just was dividing up the whole network. It was an absolute disaster. Who knew Jeff Zucker was going to get another great job after that running CNN? And he got fired. So Conan O'Brien basically fails, and they say, we're going to get rid of you because Jay had better ratings, and Conan O'Brien was just thrown into the wilderness. And he was really ticked off, and obviously Jimmy Kimmel and all the late-night buddies ran to his side against Jay Leno. And technically, he's right. I mean, Jay Leno should have just freaking left or don't sign the contract. But he stayed. So Conan is in the wilderness doing live shows. Then he got his TNT show, which was once a week, and it was getting okay ratings, but he was doing good stuff, I guess. And now he's just doing exceedingly well. He's got a podcast. He's got a channel on XM Sirius. He's got a travel show on television. And what he said is, yeah, everyone is panicked about what's going on in television. Everything is changing, but you shouldn't be because it's the same thing, only now it's streaming. This is his belief, and I don't necessarily think he's wrong, but it does show you have to change. Instead of just saying, for example, if I'm a wide receiver in football, Division I football, I want to be a wide receiver in the NFL. What if they told you the NFL is no longer it, but there's going to be football across the country? Go find it. That's really what's going on now. Instead of saying, I'm really good, I'm really funny, it's time for your late night show. Now they're saying, you're really good, you're really funny. Maybe you want to get your own podcast. Maybe you want to start streaming your own stuff. Maybe you want to start your own interstitials on various networks. He said during his speech, we're having this event now and where there's a lot to fear about the future of television, rightfully so. The life we've known for 80 years is undergoing seismic change. But this might be my nature. I choose not to mourn what is lost, because I think in the most essential way, what we have is not changing at all. Streaming changes the pipeline, but not the connection, the talent, the ideas that come into your homes, I think is as potent as ever. It's a good point. But no one has thoroughly figured it out. I mean, if you ever go to a television conference, it's probably more intriguing now than ever, because no one knows exactly what next is next, but they know people aren't going to get tired of entertainment. They still need it and insight.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're back in action this week after a very interesting week last week, ending with the Alaska summit and then the aftermath. We knew so little about it after. Now we know more, and we're about to see another exciting chapter. Sometime in the next few hours, we're going to hear from the President of the United States. And after speaking with Zelensky one-on-one or one-on-two, whatever it is, or two-on-two, but just Ukraine-U.S., and then seven other world leaders will be joining in. And then they're all supposed to meet the press. So we'll get into that. Also do a simulcast with America's Newsroom in about 30 minutes. So you'll get to see me on Fox News Channel. You haven't done that since Fox and Friends. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
All of this is a total abuse of power. It's a manufactured emergency.
What's happening here in Washington, D.C. is just a stunt. He just decided to create a new news cycle.
Plain and simple. Donald Trump wants to distract.
Distract? It's from what? Jeffrey Epstein? Jeffrey Epstein is already being investigated. We're going to hear from Bill and Hillary this week. And William Barr. D.C. standoff. More National Guardsmen flood the nation's capital. Now it's time to crack down on the teen thugs and scoop up illegals as Dems try to figure out if they are pro-crime or just anti-Trump.
Number two.
We need to disabuse ourselves of the way things have been done. It's not good enough to just hold hands, have a candlelight vigil, and talk about the way the world should be. And we have got to meet fire with fire.
Gerrymandering standoff. Has the Dems in Texas coming home? A quorum is forthcoming. California is trying to squeeze out more seats and squeeze out more Republicans. And it's got the attention of Barack Obama. He's now back leading a fundraiser for the gerrymanderers. A man not on a winning streak.
Number one.
Today is the big meeting. This really eclipses anything that happened on Friday. To have world leaders from Europe on a couple of days' notice to send on Washington really underscores how important this meeting is today. This has amazing impact on the international world order that's been in place since World War II and the Cold War.
Congressman Bill Keating, Democrat, Massachusetts, European leaders, including President Zelensky, in town. They dig in on what exactly Vladimir Putin has agreed to and what he wants. Joining us now is Michael Goodwin with the New York Post. And I'm going to talk about Mandami in your column because it is a national story. But, Michael, what do you expect today? We've had a lot of speculation about what happened since Friday, but what about today?
Good morning, Brian. Look, I think the quote from the Democratic lawmaker there, I think what this shows is that, once again, America is the center of the world.
Yeah.
And that Donald Trump has done this, I think, deliberately. He has made himself and he has made the United States the focal point and the pivot for everything else. Look, I'm not entirely shocked that Putin didn't agree to anything that was substantive in that meeting. And if you read some of the commentary about the Europeans, it's very much, oh, the UN must get involved. I mean, it's all very toothless. There is no there when it comes to European power. And so this idea that Ukraine could become part of NATO, I think, is and should remain a non-starter for the United States. It would mean, in the eventuality, sending American troops to fight Soviet troops or Russian troops on Ukraine soil. I don't think Trump is going to do that either. So the question is there anything NATO can, the NATO members can bring to the table that Trump alone could not bring? I don't think so. And I understand Ukrainians not wanting to give up any part of their territory. So I think this thing is at a real deadlock, and I don't see a quick solution, no matter how many meetings they hold, no matter where they are. I think that this went on too long. As Trump correctly says, it would not have started had he been president at the time. But Putin has found a soft spot that runs not just through parts of Ukraine, but all the way through the European capitals. And I don't think that this war is going to come to a quick close because NATO now is going to come to the White House. I would be shocked if anything comes out of this that fundamentally changes the dynamics that Putin sees in front of him.
Well, I think that Trump is open to security guarantees and Rule 5, Article 5 guarantees for Ukraine. That was one of the things that Witkoff spoke about and the president spoke about, which is that got everybody's attention. Here's what Steve Witkoff said, special envoy, cut 11.
We moved the Russians significantly past where we thought they were going to end up. Now, I had six separate sessions with President Putin before this, and I thought that we had some measure of success, but this was epic, what we achieved. That's just a flat-out fact. And so that's what I think we ought to be focusing on, what the end result is. I think that we are a whole lot closer to eliminating death on the battlefield in Ukraine and Russia. And isn't that the overall goal?
Well, he's optimistic. He was the one who recommended that Trump do this after a meeting with Vladimir Putin. Your thoughts?
I'm not persuaded. I mean, I think Witkoff is always on the positive. So he was with Iran as well, if you remember. He has been with Hamas at various times. So he's talking his own book, which is understandable. And I wish he were right about this. But I just do not believe that Putin is going to relinquish any of this territory for nothing. So what's in it for him? What's in it for Russia? And what can the European powers bring to the table that America hasn't? Maybe the guarantee that their soldiers would fight under Article 5 in Ukraine. But I never believe for a second, Brian, that Donald Trump is going to commit American troops to Ukraine to fight Russia. I just don't think that is why Trump became president. He does not want to engage American troops and see them killed in a foreign war. He has made that clear.
But so we're just talking about jet. We just have all flights, you know, air cover. That you'd have troops on the ground from other NATO nations.
Right.
So to me, if he can get a deal, I think he would commit to that because,
yes,
you know, if Russia is going to go to Ukraine, that means the Baltics are next. I mean, he's already not relinquished any. No, everyone forgets about Georgia. In 2008, he just took two provinces from Georgia and never left for no reason because he didn't like everyone said, well, Shashkevili was a little, you know, he was daring him to do it. Maybe that was the truth, but that was the beginning because he didn't get any reprisals. Then it's Crimea, and then we know what happened after that. But here,
once had a brief conversation with Shashkevili about that. And I said, have you ever spoken to Putin? This would have been in one of the green rooms at Fox. And I said, have you ever spoken to Putin after that? And he said, yes. And I said, what did he say? He said to me, see, all of your Western friends promise and don't deliver, but I keep my promises, meaning I delivered. I told you I was going to take those provinces, and I did. And I think that's still a factor. You know, does NATO have the wherewithal to stand up against Putin, the European powers? And so far, the answer has always been no.
Here's Lindsey Graham. Europe could do more. Cut 12.
To Europe, why don't you put tariffs on India for buying Russian oil? To Europe, why don't you threaten China with tariffs for being the largest purchaser of Russian oil? To Europe, you can do more. If Europe and the United States banded together and we told Russia that if this war does not come to an end, we're going to destroy your fossil fuel economy, this war would come to an end.
It's true.
I do think that's maybe the most promising avenue left. But don't forget, Russia has been able to keep the war going in part because Europe was still buying Russian gas. I mean, the whole Nord Stream two pipeline that Joe Biden let go forward. I mean, there have been enormous mistakes on the economic side in failing to grasp opportunities that would have really hurt Putin's war machine.
Michael Goodwin, our guest. So, Michael, this Zohran Mamdani has become a national figure because what he represents. He's an unabashed socialist, doesn't like capitalism, doesn't like billionaires. I could go through the whole list of things. He wants the government to run supermarkets in all boroughs, five boroughs, not all of them, but at least one, even though it's failed everywhere. He wants to raise taxes on rich people right away. So another 2%. He really has didn't get any of the black vote. He has no prominent outside Elizabeth Warren endorsements from any Democrat. And you say that last week's going after Trump was amateur hour.
Look, I think this is it's kind of like shaking the cage, right, to get attention, go around the five boroughs of New York City running for mayor by attacking the president of the United States, which, as I say, it's amateur hour because the mayor of New York City is going to need a president who's on his side. And in Donald Trump, a New Yorker, who could do many good things for the city, you'd going to get more of that if you use some sugar. But going around using him as a punching bag in the five boroughs as though that's the contest. And I equated it, Brian, to the 1975 famous Daily News headline after Gerald Ford, the president, turned down a bailout request for the city that was just facing bankruptcy. Ford to city dropped dead. Well, if there's a new headline today on that, it's Mamdani to Trump drop dead. What a stupid thing to do. The president can help you in so many areas, right? Law enforcement, welfare, education, housing, prisons, highways, bridges, tunnels, all kinds of infrastructure issues. And you're going to give him the middle finger and expect he's going to help you? It's dumb, dumb politics.
But guess what? It's politics that could benefit Republicans. And I saw that Sunday night when I interviewed Senator Scott Brown, who's running for the Senate seat in New Hampshire. He wants to flip it. And he put that pressure right on his Democratic opponent. Cut 38.
To think that you have somebody who's an anti-Semite and wants to tax rich white neighborhoods to give out free stuff, and who's not attracted by free stuff, but the fact that it's failed in other parts of the country. This is the Democratic Party of today, the AOCs, the Bernie Sanders, the Elizabeth Warrens, and now Mamdani. And this is what they're going to have to run on nationally in 26. And don't be surprised if he wins, that he won't be coming here to New Hampshire in the first in the nation primary to try to export that type of socialist, communist belief around the country, and I don't think it's going to work.
And his opponent, he asked his opponent flat out, are you going to endorse Mamdani? And he wouldn't answer the question. What is the hesitation? How about no?
Yeah.
No, look, just say no, of course not.
Brown is correct. It is a problem for Democrats everywhere, even especially in New York. I mean, Governor Hochul, right, came out. You mentioned the groceries, the government-run grocery stores. Hochul came out and said, no, I believe in the free enterprise system. She has also refused to endorse his tax plans, which would require state approval. I mean, people don't realize this, Brian, but a lot of things in New York City require New York State approval. Hochul as governor, you've got a very left legislature.
Yeah.
But if they're not going to support him, I think that's going to be a crippling blow because it just shows how far out of the mainstream he is that even the left wing of his own party is not with him.
So, Michael Goodwin, it's not even Labor Day yet, but you know New York so well. How does this play out? What do you think happens in November?
Look, there are three viable opponents to Mamdani, and I think that one of them can win. If the three of them urge their supporters to get behind one candidate. And I've believed all along that Andrew Cuomo has the best chance of doing that because he got 44% in the Democratic primary. He's now running as an independent. The incumbent mayor, Eric Adams, did not run in the Democratic primary. He's also running as an independent. Polls still show Cuomo with the best chance of, you know, coming close to Mamdani. And I think this idea of coalescing behind one of them has to happen sometime by the middle of September. That's the goal for those who are trying to make this happen. I'm somewhat non-denominational in the sense that I just think anybody who can defeat Mamdani should get broad support because, as we've talked about, Brian, Mamdani is a real danger to the welfare of this city. And so he's got to be defeated, but it can only happen if voters coalesce behind one opponent.
I know. That would be great. I worry about what he's going to do to the cops subtly, you know, putting off academies, not backing them up. Nobody's going to want to do it, not giving them pay raises. And I also worry about charter schools. He's going to support the teachers' unions who hate charter schools. The charter schools have done more for the minority community and minority kids than probably anything else in these cities. And they're mandated to be financed through the city, at least partially. And he could, and de Blasio did a job on them, and so could he. So there's a lot of damage.
His role model. I mean, it's like you pick the worst mayor in 50 years to be your role model. Boy. Darkness is coming soon.
Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Always great. America's Newsroom in 30 minutes, but your calls for the first time next. 1-8, and then at 1032, 1-866-408-7669.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
At least for me, it's the fastest. It really flies by. But I was glued to it all weekend long. Obviously, I did the special on Friday night, did 2 hours, and had the walkout on the summit. Brett Baer did a quick wrap, and I thought I was going to be looking at typical Trump 1 hour press conference after. And I thought to myself, am I even going to get on? Which is fine, you know, whatever. You ride the news, you go, and they want you a two-hour special. Trump's there, and he takes the 2 hours. That's the way it is. But I'm just thinking to myself, how much time am I actually going to have? And then to see him come out in 12 minutes, wrap up the whole thing so quickly. And also, obviously, Putin was playing Trump, and Trump knows it. Why? He knows Trump thinks there would have been no war if he was president. And listen to Putin, cut four.
Today, when President Trump is saying that if he was the president back then, there will be no war. And I'm quite sure that it would indeed be so. I can confirm that. I think that overall, me and President Trump have built a very good business-like and trustworthy contact.
I believe that Trump's closer than anyone else. I just think he's totally untrustworthy. And I think the only reason why Putin wouldn't have done that, he might have waited out Trump. But he was going to do it when at the right time. And you know what was the scenario? The last thing I wanted to see, and I don't put it, I didn't pull any of their sound bites because it sickened me. The last thing I wanted to see talk about this event was Jake Sullivan and Ned Price. These two clowns from the Biden administration who covered up Joe Biden's dementia while putting forward the worst policy, foreign policy, in my lifetime. I'm talking about October 7th, the day before, 5 days before, he said the Middle East has never been calmer. He didn't do anything to stop up the troops in the invasion in Ukraine. And do I have to tell you about Afghanistan? Of course not. Jake Sullivan, Ned Price, and by the way, shame on you for not asking them about Joe Biden's dementia when they were on your show.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Driving home, my staff who lives here in the hill reminded me, don't stop at a stoplight until I'm out of town. If I see a red light late at night, since there's very little traffic, slow up at the other block so I never come to a full stop except in the middle of the block because of carjackings. Stopping at a light, people standing in a corner, walking up with a gun.
So that is Joe Biden in 1992 when he could speak, right? Too bad. It's amazing. He had a stutter back then, too, but it didn't come out. So what was he talking about? He was trying to sell the crime bill to America. It was co-sponsored by Republicans and Democrats. Crime was a focus, and he was leading the charge. And he had Republicans, as I mentioned, working with him along the way. And he had the same famous super predator line. So there he is talking about crime in D.C. What's changed? The numbers have only gone up. In fact, they say the numbers have gone down over the last couple of years, but I don't even believe the numbers. There's already an outside investigation because it looks like somebody was cooking the books. But if you ask people in D.C., and I do, we have so many people that work there with our company. You do, too, probably have friends there. They know it's not safe. Doesn't mean there's a crime every block, but it's safe. And it comes to all different types of neighborhoods. And the president's got the authority, so he's using it. Now, other people think it's a distraction. I don't know what you're talking about. If you really think the president's doing this for a distraction, is that why he's doing Russia? Is that why he's doing a myriad of trade deals? Is that why he passed a big, beautiful bill? I mean, these are all major stories that are happening at the same time of the Epstein story. The one thing is pretty clear, and I'm biased, I admit it, but U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro, what a great pick. She's out there fighting to get make sure that these teens get charged, because these group of teens are the ones doing the bulk of the crimes, maybe put up to it by other gang members. Here she is yesterday, cut 33.
The dumbest thing the Democrats ever said was defund the police.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And we are suffering as a result of that Democrat statement, because they know how dangerous crime is. Joe Biden right there knows what people in D.C. know. And the saddest part about all of this is no one is talking about the impact on the minority community.
That's right.
And I had them look at a stat that apparently no one's looked at. 45 teenagers killed in the last year and 8 months by weapons, by shotguns, by firearms, okay? 45. Every one of them African-American. Every one of them black. No one is talking about the minority community.
So that is true. And I would hope that the National Guard, if they could take care of the monuments and you allow the cops to flood that area. National Guard's got some jurisdiction problems when it comes to arresting people. They don't really have the investigation, but their presence is welcome. In fact, they're getting 700 more National Guard members, South Carolina, West Virginia, Ohio, all sending more National Guard. When Pam Bondi posted, is over 300 were arrested in D.C. and counting just last night. The federal government and D.C. law enforcement partners made 68 arrests, 15 illegal immigrants, homicide suspect, drug traffickers are all being charged. Meanwhile, they're now, for at least 30 days, not a sanctuary city. That was part of the deal that they cut, and I love it. So Jeanine Pirro knows the old Joe Biden. And he's old now, but the old Joe Biden knew how bad it was. Scott Brown was on with me on One Nation, and he said, look, he was in the National Guard. He knows the president can do this. Cut 36.
He has the absolute authority. D.C. is different than any other place in the country, respectfully. And you know it as well as I know it. The homelessness, the crime. I had a car. When I was a senator, my car was carjacked, and we found it somewhere with it basically stripped down to nothing. And that was 15 years ago. It's a problem. This is our capital, the capital of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., the center of power. And it's basically that the mayor should do her job. They want to be a state? Give me a break. It's never going to happen. Do your damn job. Make sure the streets are safe and secure. Clean the streets, because we have the 250th, and tourists are going to be coming there. We need to represent. It should be a showcase for the world.
What I want to make sure is they end up with a presence in those African-American communities. And I think it is a focus for Jeanine Pirro. So I want her to make sure that they do. Not just in the nice areas where you get the carjacking and, you know, remember the, was it Brian Robinson, I think it was, the running back for the Washington Redskins, gets shot as he goes to get his car from valet. I mean, what was that? Is Donald Trump making that up? Is he responsible for that? So one of the writers for The Atlantic said that he has not seen the presence in the high crime areas. Cut 35.
So much of this is about symbolism. If you look at actually where crime is a very significant problem in D.C., that's not where they're sending in the troops. It's clearly something that President Trump wants to have the imagery of people patrolling the mall with their Humvees and really showing that he's protecting, you know, the tourists that are coming into the country and even the foreign leaders that are going to be coming in. It's not really about trying to solve the problem. It's about getting the right optic.
It's not really. He's trying to solve the problem. If just like, for example, do you think that the president's not trying to solve the immigration problem, just the optics? He shut down the border and is rounding up people here illegally. Is he doing that for symbolism? He's trying to bring up crime under control in Washington, D.C. What happens is the National Guard might be better off in the big areas, in the more trafficked areas, and then you send the cops to focus on the other areas, since there is security just by the presence of the National Guard. But I do want to make sure. I do want to make sure they go to the right areas. I absolutely think that's relative. So you have a whole bunch of people who are against this. I'm all for it. I don't think you need many more National Guard, according to people. They see the presence there. I want that thing down to zero. I want it ready to go. I like that this crackdown in D.C. has changed the behavior of the governor of New Mexico. She is a Democrat. But she also knows she doesn't want the president of the United States zeroing in on her city, rattling her cage, trying to find jurisdiction to go in as an emergency. Now, why would she be against that? Because it looks like she can't do the job herself. Donald Trump vilified among Democrats, doesn't want the help. Shouldn't be that way, but doesn't want the help. So therefore, she's doing it on her own. And I love that. That's the goal, just to get rid of the chaos in the inner city. Chicago, they absolutely need the help, but they won't ask for it. I mean, Chicago is such a big mess. It's unbelievable. I was looking at the rundown of what Chicago has to deal with in terms of their budget. Their budget, because they have such incompetent mayors, including the last one, two ones back, and that's Rahm Emanuel. But if you look at the budget with Chicago, look at what these school systems have to deal with. So the first day of school for 300,000 kids, the district is walking into class with a staggering $734 million deficit and no approved budget. Leaders have put forward, get this, a $10.25 billion plan that shields most classrooms from budget cuts. It also rejects a $200 million short-term loan by Mayor Brandon Johnson and his Chicago teachers union's allies to cover a $175 million pension. So they give these teachers huge pensions. Most teachers are underappreciated and underpaid, but they get these huge pensions, but there's no way to pay for it. So they take it out of the future. Johnson was warned of a vicious funding threat from President Trump, while critics include a former CPS chief accuse him of putting union interest first. Does anyone doubt that this guy is putting union interest first? Of course not. So that's what's happening in these cities. They don't want any part of it. I'm going to be talking about this shortly, but I'm going to talk about it a little now. Over the weekend, a despicable thing happened. I know you didn't attend, especially if you're not in New York, but you might have been inconvenienced by it. There was a Globalizing Infantata rally in New York City, and one of the keynote speakers, Mahmoud Khalil, he says the whole world has failed Gaza. He doesn't even bring up October 7th. He is a guy that went to Colombia, was put in detainment, and was allowed to let go. They're still trying to throw him out, and I think eventually they will. But the fact that thousands show up into New York City and they feel totally competent and confident being anti-Semitic, death to the IDF, globalized intifada, that to me, absolutely terrible. And to think that we have to deal with this guy, Mahmoud Khalil, being a keynote speaker and saying that we have failed Gaza, I have one request for him. Please go. We will pay you the thousands of dollars to fly into Gaza. Go over there and instead of creating havoc here in a country you don't belong, that you're not grateful for, leave. In what world is killing and maiming of tens of thousands of Palestinians normal? Why don't you ask Hamas that? In what world is bombing hospitals to dust while patients bleed on the floor normal? Why don't you ask why Hamas sets up their headquarters in hospitals and under hospitals, in schools and under churches and synagogues, not synagogues, what am I saying? And mosques. Palestinian death has been sanitized into numbers. No, they're inflated in numbers by the Gaza Information Bureau. Our suffering packaged into statistics. We should not be begging for the basic rights of our people. No, you should be pushing Hamas out. And you should be asking yourself, why do they take 275 hostages and wonder why hell has been brought down on them or on you? They don't care that you're in the line of fire and Mahmoud Khalil is doing their dirty work. Money is flowing into these college systems. It's got to be identified and it's got to be stopped. When we come back, I'm going to be doing a simulcast and possibly have some time to squeeze in some calls on the other side. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Just a quick reminder, it's coming up this Saturday. I can't believe it. August 23rd, Saturday night in Dallas, Texas. The AT&T Performing Arts Center. You're going to love it. History, Liberty, and Laughs as we come up on America's 250th birthday. I'll be able to talk about my 7 history books, 2 sports books, and make it an inspirational, patriotic night. And every show is different. It's going to stream on Fox Nation. But if you're in Dallas, I mean, what's better than coming into air conditioning, this beautiful theater, and then getting a chance? I'll be able to talk to you. You can get shirts that say Stay Within Yourself, which you can only get if I sell them to you personally. And then we can sign books and everything. And then we got the pre-show, which we already have more VIPs than ever. We're over 100 VIPs. So I'm not used to that. We're used to like 25, 30 because it's VIP. But I never thought we'd get this type of response. And then on the 27th in Richmond, Virginia, I cannot wait to go back. I normally go back there in the spring, but it's usually for a soccer tournament. But now we're going to be going back in the area. We're going to go back in the area for a special, and then November 1st in Pottstown. What we're going to be doing shortly is going on your favorite news channel, Fox News Channel, with Dana and Bill Malusian, and they're coming to us in about 1 minute. And we're going to be talking about a couple of things we have not discussed yet, but I will be discussing the one thing that I will be discussing on the other end of this, the crazy soundbite, if there is some time. I don't know if they're going to take me right to the break. The crazy soundbite. And Eric, what I will do is if they go through the break, did Allison explain to you? Eric is running things. So I'm going to just lock out with our audience if we want to go to the top of the hour. And we're going to continue. But I want to talk about James Comey. If they leave me some time in the back end, this guy has totally lost his mind. And if there's any debate of it, the fact that he thinks Taylor Swift is saving basically his life and his family and is the counter to Donald Trump is absolutely insane. And he goes on for about 10 minutes. I wouldn't expect a 21-year-old reporter from Teen Magazine to go on that long about Taylor Swift and the impact on his or her life, let alone a 70-year-old former FBI director.
Fox News alert, you need to know this information. Texas Democrats who fled the state, they have returned home.
They are back Fox News Austin Channel, and they're going to put up my microphone shortly. But they're talking about the quorum that could be taking place right now, and gerrymandering can begin in Texas. So we'll stay up with that, and you see that in the background. Today. So let's listen
Texas
in together.
TikTok Democrats that get home just in time.
And they just put a press release out declaring victory, even though Governor Abbott has just called another special session. And DPS is still under orders to find them and arrest them. And they've been racking up those $500 a day fines. So if that's how victory is defined,
All right, we'll see. All right, well, more on that later as the story continues.
In the meantime, the NFL is kicking off yet another season with all 32 teams featuring social justice messages in the end zone at each home game. The teams can pick from different slogans: end racism, stop hate, choose love, or inspire change.
Coming to you.
New edition, replacing vote. Brian Kilmeade joining us now from his show on Fox News Radio. Brian, great to see you. So here we go again, another season with the slogans, and here's what the NFL is saying about it. Quote, this is an honor and responsibility that the league takes seriously, which is why we actively invest in off-field programs and on-field initiatives that promote unity. Your thoughts?
My thoughts is we don't need it. Six straight years since the George Floyd riots. I cannot believe that was it. At the time, they had all Black Lives Matter stuff. That whole organization's an embarrassment. I'd like to know where the hundreds of millions of dollars went. But now, choose love. It takes all of us. Inspire change. End racism. Vote and salute to service. Please tell me whose lives have been changed by this. I wish the NFL can go back to one national anthem. I don't need a slogan in the back of the end zone. The league has never been hotter, better, or more interesting. And I'm not just saying that because Jackson Dart has shown so much promise and the Giants have been let me down so much over the last couple of years. But we don't need this. The country has moved on, thankfully. We're past that point. So I find it disappointing. I went to a Super Bowl and the President of the United States was actually cheered. The country has moved on. Why keep bringing us back? And I don't know who they're inspiring with those, with the things on the bottom of their helmets or with the end zone. I don't know about you, Dana.
Well, you know, I watch a lot of football. But it is interesting that most of corporate America is turning away from this type of thing, but the NFL continues. But that, I guess it's their choice if they want to do that. And then I wanted to ask you about this. Gal Gadot, she opened up about this Hollywood pressure to speak out against Israel, and she says that she thinks that hurt the Snow White box office numbers. She said there's pressure on celebrities to speak against Israel, and she said this in Hebrew. And she said, it happened. I can always explain and try to give context about what's happening here, and I always do that. But in the end, people make their own decisions, and I was disappointed that the movie was incredibly affected by all that and that it didn't do well at the box office. And this whole issue in terms of pressure against Israel and anyone who is Israeli or supports them is very real, Brian.
You know what's amazing, Dana, what I pulled from that is he says that she was direct pressure from Hollywood. Yeah. That means to the producers and the financiers and the studios to come out for Gazans, Palestinians, really? After October 7th, your worry is that people aren't speaking up for the Gazans, for Hamas, for the Palestinians? I mean, how backwards is Hollywood? Number two, Gail Godot is a patriot of Israel and loves America. She was in the IDF. She co-starred with Rachel Zegler, who evidently was huge for Palestine. She always say free Palestine. She'd post that. So she'd alienate the Jewish community there. And then by her presence, she was alienating, I guess, the Arab world. So together, we have to factor into the dwarf issue. Evidently, Peter Dinklage, who's a dwarf and is very successful, right? He said there used to be Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but he didn't like how the dwarfs were portrayed with seven wives and the seven dwarfs. So he says, use CGI. Well, there were other dwarfs that wanted to be in that movie, Snow White
movie.
Yeah,
they wanted to work.
Yeah, exactly. They wanted to work. So that was the first bad step. Then we got the October 7th, should not have divided Snow White, for goodness sake. And here's something, it still made over $200 million, but the problem is it cost $275 million. So it's lost, but it wasn't hideous. I just don't understand why Hollywood gets involved with any of this. I would have said the exact opposite. Guys, can you just not post about this?
How about you go figure it out on your last hour on radio and report back to us? Loved having you on Newsroom. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for having me. Bye, guys. I did not know. I forgot. I knew there was something with the dwarf situation, but I did not know it was Peter Dinklage who was against putting dwarfs in movies. I don't know why, because I guess it didn't make dwarfs look good. I thought the dwarfs looked great in Snow White, but I don't even remember Snow White as well as I used to. And I blame myself for that. But I can't see the movie because it's just too controversial.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're back in action now, and there's a lot going on. Man, this is going to be a big day. I thought Friday was big, and it was in Alaska because it was so unscripted, so different. It was Alaska, too. And then, you know, we had our interview with President Trump on Thursday, so he really let us know what he thought about going into it. Instead of 15 minutes, he gave us 40 minutes. So that was pretty fantastic. And then we did the coverage. I did the coverage at night. I was lucky enough to do that. I was supposed to fill in for Laura, end up doing Laura's hour and Jesse's hour. Both were away. And then to be able to do Sunday Live on One Nation has been fantastic, all leading up to today, which at noon scheduled, things can change, is going to be the Ukraine delegation and the U.S., and then the European nations, seven heads of state are here. This is fascinating times. And what I love in the Trump era, nothing scripted and formalized. So we're supposed to have a press conference with all of them. So that's pretty crazy in a good way. Mark Penn, who was asked to go to the White House to give the president a rundown because he's a pollster now. He's with chairman of Stagwell. And you see what he does, the Harris polls. So Mark Penn was asked to go to the White House, just talk to the president. The president really likes him, respects what he does. I think he's really good. He's going to be with us in 30 minutes. Greg Slayton, the former U.S. senior diplomat for Bush, Obama, and chairman of the Slayton Capital and author of Portraits of Ukraine, A Nation at War, will be with us in a matter of moments. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
All of this is a total abuse of power. It's a manufactured emergency.
What's happening here in Washington, D.C. is just a stunt. He just decided to create a new news cycle.
Plain and simple. Donald Trump wants to distract.
Distract? Are you crazy? Distract what? By doing the Russian situation, the passing the big, beautiful bill? You think the Epstein story? This Epstein story is being investigated. William Barr just walked in. He's not looking to distract. He's looking to make history. And he's also looking to bring law and order back to the streets that was not there when he left the White House the first time.
Number two.
We need to disabuse ourselves of the way things have been done. It's not good enough to just hold hands, have a candlelight vigil, and talk about the way the world should be. And we have got to meet fire with fire.
Gavin Newsom thinks he's the one to do it. Gerrymandering standoff. The Dems have come home to Texas, giving the Republicans a quorum to redistrict. California says they're going to put a referendum on the ballot that does the same exact thing. They want to squeeze out about five more seats. I don't think it's going to pass, and I don't think it's possible.
Number one.
Today is the big meeting. This really eclipses anything that happened on Friday. To have world leaders from Europe on a couple of days' notice descend on Washington really underscores how important this meeting is today. This has amazing impact on the international world order that's been in place since World War II and the Cold War.
And that's a Democrat from Massachusetts. European leaders, including Zelensky, are in town, and they dig in on what really came out of the Alaska summit, what we can count on Russia to do. If anything, we go over the decisions made. Gregory Slayton joins us now. Gregory, what do you thanks so much for joining us today. I know the Ukrainian people don't seem too thrilled by the optics of Alaska. Should they feel hopeful that there could be an end in sight?
Well, I think so, Brian. It's good to see you again. Always good to be on your show. I think so. I think it's great that President Trump is seeking peace. I think he has to remember the Ronald Reagan dictum, peace through strength. There is no appeasing Vladimir Putin. He'll take whatever we give him, and he'll take some more. So I'm thrilled that the president, President Trump, has invited these seven European leaders, Zelensky. I'm really hoping and praying for an outstanding meeting today where we, as the Western democracies, can really stand together against the guy who has promised many, many times. He's signed lots of agreements. Russia has signed everything from the Budapest Memorandum in 1994 and many others, and has broken every single one of those treaties. So we just have to be careful. Trust but verify, as the Gipper always said.
Minsk 1 and 2, he also violated that. So they did a poll inside Ukraine. 69% wanted a negotiated settlement to end the war. In the beginning of the war, only 22%. I don't blame them. I mean, what they've been forced to deal with, we have given them enough arms not to lose, but also not to win. So they've been putting up with now this drones, the North Korean troops. It's unbelievable what they've already done. But they are getting war weary. But how this war ends has a lot to do with how they feel about it.
No, Brian, you're exactly right. People are tired. I was just in Kyiv, and people are tired. Everybody's lost a friend or a family member or their house or village, or everybody's lost something. And of course, people want peace. But no one, and I guarantee you, no one I spoke to wants to roll over and play dead for the Russian bear. No one. So yes, a fair peace, a peace with some reasonable security guarantees. Right. Everyone is in favor of that. Remember when President Trump offered both sides a ceasefire, Zelensky said right away, yes, a ceasefire is a good idea. Putin has continued to move the goalposts. I'm not ready. We have to deal with historical conditions. And when you dig into what he's really saying, he was saying he wants Ukraine to surrender. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, according to people in the room, the Russians feel like they got momentum on the battlefield, said they don't want a ceasefire. They want a peace deal, if anything. But this is the part of Vladimir Putin, and there's a lot I hate, but especially this ridiculous statement that I hope he doesn't think we're buying. Cut three.
At the same time, we're convinced that in order to make the settlement lasting and long-term, we need to eliminate all the primary roots, the primary causes of that conflict. And we've said it multiple times, to consider all legitimate concerns of Russia and to reinstate a just balance of security in Europe and in the world on the whole.
So he's worried about the root causes of the war. He is the cause of the war. Ukraine was never a threat to him. It was not a puppet for him. And that's the root cause.
Thank you, Brian. Ukraine has been an independent, sovereign nation, democracy. Of course, like all democracies, there are problems. That's true. That's probably true in our nation, too. But for over 35 years, and they have not been, they've not, you, when you poll the Ukrainian people, nobody, and I mean, it's 80%+ want to remain independent of Russia. And it's actually higher than that. It's more like 90%. But the point is, Putin doesn't like the way it is now. He's been very clear about his desire to reestablish greater Russia. That's not just Ukraine. That's Poland. That's Moldova. That's Georgia. That's a whole lot of other countries that right now are independent. It's like Hitler in the 30s. If we don't stop Putin now, he's not going to stop himself. He's not.
Do you think he learned a harsh lesson in this conflict, despite what he says? I mean, that he lost 20,000 soldiers over the last 5 months. 20,000 soldiers. He's lost over a million casualties.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of dead. The money, the isolation. I mean, this has been an embarrassment for him. NATO's never been stronger, more motivated. Two more quality countries now join the alliance.
Correct.
He lost Syria, and that means access to the Middle East. They lost a port in the Middle East. My goodness.
Yeah. No, Brian, you are 100% right. My sources in Kyiv tell me that the Russians are losing on average 1,000 men a day, killed or wounded, not just killed, but killed or severely wounded. I mean, that's a tremendous strain. You're right. Over a million men killed and wounded. The Russian economy, you know, their national reserve fund has gone from 3.7 down to basically nothing. So we're talking about an absolute disaster economically. Inflation rate is up in the high teens. I mean, Vladimir Putin rue the day he started this war, but that's why he's not going to give up. He's not going to give up until we force him to give up.
So if, as Marco Rubio brought up, say, look, if we hit them with sanctions, we can do that. We might end up doing that, but the talks end for a year. So we maximize the sanctions. We get the third-party sanctions on China, on Turkey, on Brazil, on India that's already there. Okay.
Right.
Maybe we take their $300 billion, which I hope we have done before, and just give it to Ukraine. Okay. But just keep in mind, the flip side of that is the war continues for another 2 years. And that is what Trump didn't want to do as a mediator.
Yes.
So why play that card? Politically, they say, why did Trump not hit him with sanctions? Because he's thinking, what gets me to the outcome I want? I might end up there, but if I do that, I've voted the die has been cast.
Well, I appreciate that, Brian. You're absolutely right. First thing, and President Trump is 100% right, stop the killing on both sides. Let's talk for a moment about the thousands of Ukrainian civilians that are killed and wounded every single month by Russian drones and first-person aerial vehicles. So you're absolutely right. My fear is that Putin will take everything we give him and will continue to attack and attack. Remember that July was by far the most civilian casualties in Ukraine of the entire war. Every single month this year, Putin has sent more and more drones and missiles after hospitals, churches, schools. I mean, it is horrible. So President Trump knows what he's doing. He's a great negotiator. But I do think that bringing sanctions into play would force Putin much more quickly. Their economy, I just did a big article in the New York Post on this. The Russian economy is in dire, dire straits. They're trying to paper it over, but the cracks are showing. Entire industries, the coal industry, the hospitality industry, the aviation industry are going bankrupt. So Russia doesn't have a year. If we hit them with sanctions, I think that'll bring Vladimir Putin to the table much more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, because I just think that it's a non-starter when you want Ukraine to swap land that Russia can't win in battle.
And correct.
And that they can't do that. I mean, they've already taken illegally 20% of the country, and now a part that they can't win that they fortified, it's called the Fortress Belt, made up of four large cities. So come on, you can't do that. But I understand, get in there. So Article 5 consideration, I get it. So you want to go back and forth, and they say, well, we'll give you Zaporizhzhia, we'll give you a nuclear power plant back, we'll give you Sumy. All right. I know we're dealing with the Ukrainian land, and in a fair, free world, that we wouldn't be dealing like this. But in the real world, we got to get down to rolling up your sleeves and getting to the bottom here, unless Ukraine feels as though it's to their benefit to grind it out more. Like you said, the economy could go over the edge.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because Donetsk, the Ukrainians for 10 years have been building a huge defensive fortifications right there. Russia has not been able to penetrate it in 3.5 years of full scale warfare, right? So why would America, why would we agree to give away a huge chunk of the United States for nothing, right? It doesn't make any sense. This is Ukrainian land that is very well defended. As I said, Russia, this would be the single biggest victory. What they're asking for, if we agree to it and Ukraine agrees to it, would be the by far the largest battlefield victory in the war for Russia. Why would Ukraine do that? It makes no sense.
All right. Do you? The president says, I'm going to continue to sell our weapon systems to NATO. NATO's buying them and they're going to put them in. And he's going to make that clear. He kind of made that clear to us already. So even if he gets mad at Zelensky again today, the weapons are still going to go.
Absolutely.
Because NATO's buying them, and I like the idea, and it quiets down the Republicans and all the people on the far right who says we're wasting too much money in foreign wars.
Well, you've probably seen, Brian, the polls are really shifting. I mean, the majority of Republicans say we should support Ukraine
as
an independent. Yeah, exactly. And the number that say we should not support Ukraine has shrunk dramatically. So I'm glad the American people are looking at this honestly. We've done a lot of work on this. I do a lot of op-eds in the New York Post and National Review and stuff. This book, which we published early in the spring, we give 100% of the proceeds, 100% of the profits to really good Ukrainian charities. And of course, it's not just us, you and Fox. There's been a lot of good work on this. And I'm very thankful that the American people are saying, no, no, this is a democratic ally that has borne the brunt themselves. I mean, Ukraine's lost over at least 300,000, 400,000 men killed and wounded. And of course, it's a much smaller country than Russia. So they have borne the brunt of this battle, and we need to be with them.
Yeah, it's 150 million against, I think, 46 million.
Even less.
Is it? Okay. Portraits of Ukraine, A Nation at War. Greg Slayton, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Pick up the book. Hey, it goes for a great cause.
Thank you, Brian. Always good to see you. And Brian, I remember one last thing. When President Trump was with you back in March or something, he specifically talked about you asked him, and he said about the 20,000 Ukrainian children who've been kidnapped. That's important. I was so proud of our first lady that she wrote that letter to Putin and said, Mr. Putin, you know, time to give back these kidnapped kids. We cannot forget about that. Imagine if we were in war with anybody and 20,000 American kids were kidnapped. And now they're being, you know, reprogrammed into Russian families as, quote, unquote, orphans, which, of course, they're not at all. So it's just it's another horrific war crime.
They're put into binders and put in adoption books, and people show up. And bottom line, people say, how'd they get them? Not just orphanages, boarding schools. They were just in boarding schools. Can imagine you're some great schools or boarding schools. That's, so don't act like the Ukrainians had dispatched their kids somewhere else.
No,
these kids had families.
Not at all.
Thanks
so much.
And
some of those kids were taken right off the battlefield. You know, Russians come in, everybody's scrambling. Somehow the kids get separated. They end up in Russian hands. Instead of returning them, they take them back to Mother Russia and try and reprogram their minds. It's a
sick
another horrible war crime.
Unbelievable. Gregory Slayton, thanks so much. All right. When we come back, I'll be able to get some calls, 1-866-408-7669. And we'll talk about where these polls are going. Mark Penn and also Democrats. They got some bad news. They have earned this summer less money than at any point over the last 5 years. The Republicans are tripling them. It's usually just the opposite after a big election win like 2024. We'll explain. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right. So listen, I know I'm not going to get through all of it, but I just want to play a little of it. If you aren't convinced that James Comey has lost his mind, I mean, literally lost his mind, listen to him. This guy does 5 minutes on Taylor Swift. Do we know?
Of course we need to stand up to jerks and defend what matters. But I think we have to try to do that without becoming like them, which is what makes me think about Taylor Swift. She's made clear that she sees Donald Trump for what he is, while our elderly makeup-covered president is posting about whether Taylor Swift is still hot and declaring that he can't stand her, what's she doing? Living her best life. She said something about dealing with internet trolls that stuck with me. Think of your energy as if it's expensive, she said. As if it's like a luxury item. Not everyone can afford it. We can't stop people from being jerks. What we can do is stop it from hurting us, from changing us.
You know, I'm not the biggest fan, but they say Bob Dylan was this poet who is a great lyricist, and I guess it's beyond reproach. I'm not a fan, but I watched the movie and I understand it. You know, you look at people like Cicero, anyone with one name, is either a soccer star or a great philosopher, Socrates, Plato. If he's quoting Aristotle, like, okay, deep thinker, you know, this guy is, you know, well-schooled and he's showing off, but he's quoting a pop singer. Whatever you think about her, she writes about simple things like breaking up with guys and trying to meet somebody and, I don't know, driving a car. And that's what inspires him?
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We need to disabuse ourselves of the way things have been done. It's not good enough to just hold hands, have a candlelight vigil, and talk about the way the world should be. We have got to recognize the cards that have been dealt. And we have got to meet fire with fire.
That is Gavin Newsom, who thinks he can make some headway. He clearly is running for president and wants to be the foil against Trump. And that's the best way to do it. He's also posting up Truth Social, Twitter X posts that shows he's trying to do in the Trump language. Is that going to work? Haven't we tried this before? Mark Penn, CEO and chairman of Stagwell, does the Harris polls, joins us now. Mark, is this going to be an effective move for Newsom to put himself as the counter to Texas and Trump?
Well, look, Newsom fundamentally has an uphill battle to be a credible presidential candidate based on his record in California, based on what happened with the fire and fire management. So obviously he doesn't want to talk about California and his record. He wants to talk about Trump. And he's going to fight for the Democratic Party. I suppose it's a better strategy than talking about his record because he doesn't really have much to talk about.
He hasn't really been strong on his record, but he wants to get publicity, and he certainly looks the part. To me, he just comes off as an actor. He's got 38% approval rating. What about Arnold Schwarzenegger? And I know this is drilling down and kind of, you know, the last Republican governor. He came out and said, for gerrymandering, I'm going to fight you. And now he's got to put up, he's got to put something on a ballot to reverse the rule that an independent council decides what districts is our districts in California. He wants to remove it for 1 year. That referendum right now is underwater, right?
Yes. I think the 70% of Californians oppose it because Californians and people in every state, by the way, want themselves to be represented in Congress based on who and what they are. So, so if he loses that, oh, my God, then he's like made a complete fool of. So I don't know if he's really going to go down that path. But if he does, he better win.
Yeah. Or else it could be critical. I mean, that could be fatal, couldn't it?
Yeah, because then he'll look like he has complete egg on his face and he was going to fight. Only he had a pop gun, you know. And so put all these threats out in terms of it. Look, the reality is that Obama and Holder gerrymandered the country on behalf of Democrats and for years. And you can see in all of these states, including California, that Republicans are generally underrepresented by like half. And, you know, what Texas is doing, I'm not going to endorse it. But I am going to say in the scheme of the overall map between the gerrymandering in the big Democratic states and what happened with the census count, which to me was actually much more outrageous, which is that they issued a census and then 2 years later said, never mind, But everything had been redistricted already when they realized that the population had been misallocated. So, you know, I don't know. And voters don't care about any of this stuff, to be honest.
Maybe. Kevin Kiley, who's a Republican in California, says they looks like Gavin Newsom is up to something. Cut 25.
The good news is a poll just a couple days ago came out showing that voters are standing by their decision. They're saying, thanks for asking. We want to keep the independent commission. We don't want to give this power back to politicians. The bad news is that Newsom has already come up with a plan to defraud the people of California by making the yes option on the ballot look like no, and by making no, you'll look like yes. And they're going to spend over $100 million to perpetrate that fraud on our electorate. So we are going to need to fight against this in every way that we can.
So there might be a little bit of deception there.
I hope not. I mean, look, some of the courts, this has been tried before in California, and sometimes the courts actually step in and require that people be able to understand, you know, the text of the ballot and that yes is not no and no is not yes. So that's a fair point that's being made, but I'm sure that's going to undergo some kind of court scrutiny based on the litigious world that we live in.
I hope so. So the other thing is I find surprising is President Obama, you mentioned him and Eric Holder, after they left office, went on a gerrymandering mission. I got it. They said they wanted to make it fairer. Obviously, they want to make it fairer for Democrats to their advantage. Now they're back in action. And it looks like Barack Obama is having a huge fundraiser with Nancy Pelosi, I believe, in Narragansett. Your thoughts about President Obama coming back again, but this time earlier? Does it surprise you?
I don't know if I'm surprised at this point. I mean, former president, it's very hard to be a young former president as he was. He and both Bill Clinton were young two-term former presidents. But the general role for former presidents was to operate in the spirit of the amendment that limited you to two terms and get out of politics and do something else, which I don't know. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And both Pelosi and Obama, I suppose, are somewhat better than AOC and Mandami. So I'm not gonna criticize that compared to the alternatives here.
So, Mark, I understand if you could tell me I'm wrong, but I understand the president asked you to come to the White House and ask you some questions.
Well, you know, I never comment on stuff like that. So you can ask away, but
could I ask you, have you ever been asked by a Republican president before?
Let's just say that I have. Look, you know, I do, as you know, a lot of polling and a lot of independent polling these days, you know, outside of campaigns. And I enjoy briefing different leaders of what's going on in the country, because the most important reason I went into polling was in many different countries so that leaders would always have a good understanding of what the people are thinking and how they're reacting to presidents. So anytime, let's say anytime I can do that, I'm always happy to do it.
And I guess you did it. Ken Martin, the DNC, head of the DNC, is struggling this summer. He says they are trailing in every metric with the Republicans in fundraising, and they have less cash this summer than at any point in 5 years. Why?
Well, the Democratic Party has the lowest ratings it's had in like 40 or – well, really – I've been polling for close to 50 years, and it is the lowest ratings that I've seen the Democratic Party have. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, they're trailing in numbers. But you know, the left has a lot of energy. They're raising a lot of money, and that's the unfortunate thing of the social media age, where the extremes, you know, have more access to funding through social media than the mainstreams. Look, I don't really pay much attention to these early fundraising numbers. There are going to be some big campaigns here. There's big donors on both sides. The Democrats have not experienced any net shortage of money. In fact, they've had a huge – the same time that they've been against, quote, dark money, they've been the biggest beneficiaries of dark money, and they've outspent the Republicans like 50%. So maybe it'll be a more even playing field, but I'm not really worried one way or the other by the financial numbers. I think the polling numbers are much more serious.
Right. And for the most part, you still believe, if I'm looking at your past interviews, that the price of goods are going to have a lot to do with it. You could tell if people inflation's down, but when they go shopping, when they go to buy things, especially around Christmas, and we're still trying to make heads or tails of the tariffs. They have not had a huge impact on the economy, but they have brought in a lot of revenue. If I was to rank the most important things to the American people, where would inflation and the price of goods rank?
Well, look, inflation is overwhelmingly the number one issue. But what people really mean by inflation is, how is the economy going? Are my wages rising, you know, faster or slower than prices? You know, most of the inflation happened during the Biden administration. You know, is inflation under control? Are my wages increasing? Is the economy good? Look, everybody knows during the first term that Trump had, a national consensus emerged that the economy was good. At this point, we're not at that stage. There's like another year. I think, you know, Trump has put in is working with international trade agreements and tariffs to make it more expensive to buy something overseas and promote more domestic production. And that's his goal. And he's trying to achieve that goal through the use of these tariffs. And I always explain to people that we only import 10% of the economy. So the impact of the tariffs, although differential by industry, 10 or 15% tariff is like 1% of the economy. There was like, you know, that pales in comparison to some of the inflation numbers. And I also think that the Fed is operating incorrectly because in reality, a price increase due to a taxation, which tariffs are taxes, money goes into the government, contracts the economy, and they should be lowering rates to accommodate that. But I think inflation is number one, but a general sense that the economy is growing, that innovation is happening. You know, I think the president has a year to get that from today. If a year from now we're sitting here and saying, you know, this economy is really pretty good, growth is higher, people are happier, then the Republicans are going to have a pretty strong midterm. And if they're saying the economy is worsened, you know, that's going to be more of a problem. But that is the defining problem for the voters.
So I had an interview with Scott Brown. He wants to flip that seat in New Hampshire. He obviously got experienced the big upset and wins Ted Kennedy's seat, then lost the next two races, was ambassador to New Zealand, and now is coming back again. Well, he's going against his opponent. And the first thing he did is say, tell me about Zohran Mamdani. Where do you stand? And the guy would not answer. He would not just say, he's not my speed. I'm not a socialist. I am a capitalist. Even Kathy Hochul has said that as governor of New York. So Scott Brown is making headway. Listen, cut 36.
To think that you have somebody who's an anti-Semite and wants to tax rich white neighborhoods to give out free stuff, and who's not attracted by free stuff, but the fact that it's failed in other parts of the country. This is the Democratic Party of today, the AOCs, the Bernie Sanders, the Elizabeth Warrens, and now Mamdani. And this is what they're going to have to run on nationally in 26. And don't be surprised if he wins, that he won't be coming here to New Hampshire in the first in the nation primary to try to export that type of socialist, communist belief around the country, and I don't think it's going to work.
So he's going to push it, and that's going to be what they're running on. Is that why Hakeem Jeffries rumored to have said if he wins, we're not going to win the House?
Well, look, there's a problem here with the Democratic Party in the sense that there's a group of Democratic socialists. They're not Democrats. They have a complete different ideology. You can look up their website. You know, it calls basically for the confiscation of private property, the destruction of Israel, the defunding of the police. It basically is way outside what mainstream Democrats would support. And yet the party has accepted them as Democrats and let them burrow in and maybe even control the party. And if that happens, then yes, Hakeem Jeffries, rumored to say that, but definitely, unless the Democratic Party fixes that problem, if they're taken over by the Democratic Socialists, they're not going to do well in national elections.
But they do have the heat, and they do get the crowds.
They get the crowds because look, the extremes get the crowds. They get money. But this is not a, you know, if I ask people, you know, are you socialists or not, there's still going to be 80% who are capitalists in this country. And if I ask people, therefore, Israel, Hamas, 80% are going to be, or 75 to 80% are going to be for Israel over Hamas. If I ask people if they want to defund the police or not, 70 to 80% will not want to defund the police. So a 20% movement here can get a lot of heat, can get a lot of traction, can win in New York City with 400,000 voters and low turnout primaries. But that's very different from winning on the national scene. Remember, Democrats in 72 and 84 were reduced to a single state. Republicans went through a lot of wilderness, too. And parties, you know, do wind up in the wilderness. And there is a path here for the Democratic Party to be in the wilderness for a long time. And that's called being taken over by the Democratic Socialists.
Thanks so much, Mark Penn. I appreciate it. And I will get to the bottom of how your visit to the White House went, just without your cooperation.
Thank you.
Go get him. Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Again, Mr. President, I'd like to thank you very much. And we'll speak to you very soon and probably see you again very soon. Thank you very much, Vladimir.
Next time in Moscow.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I don't know. I'll get a little heat on that one. But I could see it possibly happening. Thank you very much, Vladimir.
So we're looking at that's the final words between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. And then they went to the respective interviews and made statements. And now we have the next phase happening so shortly. It is now going to be the European leaders first to meet with President Trump. And then it's going to be with Zelensky and maybe together. You know, the president doesn't get into formalities. He does what feels right. If he feels like Zelensky and these world leaders together would be a better combination, he'll do it. It doesn't matter to him. He wants one resolve. He wants it to end. I think how it ends matters a lot more. So right now we see that Russia is pounding Ukraine. They're trying to make additional gains, but they'll pay a price for that too, because Ukraine does a lot of the killing. I mean, 20,000 they lost this month. Is that incredible? August is not even done. They lost 500,000 this year so far. A couple of things I think is going to happen. I think that the European Union is going to say, along with the president, these are the three things that we're going to demand from Vladimir Putin to continue to speak. And I know we'll do the lead on this. Number one, that Rule 5, the Article 5 guarantee that if Ukraine is attacked, yeah, they're not going to be a member of NATO, but we're going to have international troops there. If they're hit, we're going to attack back. That will stop the next attack. I think it absolutely will. Why is it that Russia has not hit a NATO nation? You know why. Because it would mean the wrath of 30-plus powers, including two new ones, Sweden and Finland. So that'll be important. By the way, if you want to look for the next meeting, which I hope will be a trilateral meeting, they're looking at Hungary, Budapest, Hungary. Makes sense. He was one of the few world leaders to visit Putin since the war started, and he's been a critic and not been much of a supporter of Ukraine. I think they only give 1%, Hungary is their leader, Viktor Orban, visited Mar-a-Lago, is kind of tight with the president, but we'll see. Who tends to be critical of Zelensky? I'm not. I think that he's done an incredible job, judging by what he's dealing with. I can't bring you inside Ukrainian politics, but if you didn't want to do this job, if you weren't good at this job, you'd have been out of this job. So I haven't really even seen a political rival step up. But there's some other things I think it's important to point out. You have the European leaders coming to town, but they're not there to berate the president. They're not there to protect Zelensky. I never thought they would. But Marco Rubio took this on Face the Nation, Cut 9.
You know there is concern from the Europeans that President Zelensky is going to be bullied into signing something away. That's why you have these European leaders coming as backup tomorrow. Can you
reassure them? No, it isn't. That's not why they're coming as backup. That's not true. No, but that's not why that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're
well,
not
that
coming.
February
in fact,
Oval Office they're coming meeting here in front of television cameras where President Zelensky.
Do you know how many meetings we've had
down
since then?
Oh, no, I know. And I was just up in Alaska watching the one with Vladimir Putin where a red carpet rolled
out.
No, but
it was Zelensky. We've had more meetings. We've had one meeting with Putin and like a dozen meetings with Zelensky. So, but that's not true.
I just love it because you're not going to outspeak Marco Rubio. He's a heck of a debater, but knows foreign policies backwards and forwards. I don't think Trump's foreign policy is Rubio's foreign policy, but he knows he's the national security advisor and secretary of state for a president. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.